Welcome to the Great Loop Radio Podcast, brought to you by America's Great Loop Cruisers Association. We're dedicated to sharing Great Loop information and inspiration with those actively cruising, planning for, or dreaming about a Great Loop adventure. I'm Kim Russo. I'm the director of AGLCA. Today, we're continuing our popular series on the story of our loop, where we bring in some of our gold loopers, which is anyone who's completed the route, and they kind of share some of the details of their trip and what it was like for them, their boat, what they gained from it. So we will be jumping into that topic today. First, I want to take a moment, as usual, to recognize and thank our Admiral sponsors who support AGLCA at the highest level. They are Curtis Stokes & Associates, Great Loop Yacht Sales, Passage Maker Trawler Fest, Skipper Bob Publications, and Waterway Guide Media. As always, we encourage you to support these businesses that support the Great Loop. And with the business out of the way, I am thrilled to have Bake and Lee Baker with me today. Bake and Lee, thanks for joining me.
You bet. It's great to see you, Kim. Thanks.
Yeah, it's great to have you here, and I can see you're on board. So let's just kind of start out. Tell us a little bit about your boat. And this is the same boat you looped on, correct?
It is. It's a Grand Banks 42, 1977. It's the first boat. We bought this boat, we're sailors, but it's specifically the boat we bought this trawler to do the loop. Mm-hmm. It was the first boat we looked at. It had been upgraded. It was a freshwater boat, and it had been upgraded tremendously. So we were really fortunate to find it.
Yeah. But, well. Covered it.
Okay.
So first boat that you looked at, most likely I'm guessing then you had done a lot of homework beforehand to try and figure out what you might want.
Yeah, we had attended one of the trawler fests in Baltimore mm-hmm. before we started the trip. That was really helpful. Went to some of the boat buying classes, and then we walked up and down the dock, you know, looking at all the boats, and then had done a bunch of research. And then we had a friend who had done a lot of boating in the Great Lakes and had provided us with some insights, some tips, and so on. So, yeah, so we had a pretty good sense of it. And thought that we wanted probably a walk around deck arrangement like a Grand Banks. And certainly we're looking for an older boat just from a price point of view. And had called a broker in the Green Bay, Sturgeon Bay area. And he had interviewed us on kind of by phone and online and said, you know, I think I have a couple of boats. Come on over and look at them. And as Lee said, this was the very first, we looked at other boats, but this was the very first one that we actually looked at. Yeah. And it was in great shape and served us really well.
Yeah. So for those who are still looking for their Great Loop boat and might be thinking a Grand Banks 42 sounds like a possibility, give us a little bit of the specs, you know, how many heads, how many berths, engines, that kind of thing.
Sure. So it's a forward cabin V berth with a head and a small shower, an aft cabin with in our situation, kind of a three quarter and a single on either side in the aft with a head and a small shower again, with a pretty good sized salon in between with a kitchen, kind of a U-shaped settee, and then a lower helm. We have 220 horsepower Ford Lehmans, old reliable engines. I don't know when they were actually designed, but they're not the cleanest engines in the world, but they certainly are reliable. I think we've got pushing 4,000 hours on them. And we did have the heads rebuilt, but they're just keep going strong and steady. We have about almost 1,000 mile range with our fuel, a diesel fuel. We've got about, oh, I don't know, 180 gallons of water, 90 gallon holding tank. So we have a pretty long kind of range and quite self-sufficient.
And then we have a flybridge up top mm-hmm. with all the same nav equipment up there, tons of space. Anyway.
Yeah.
So question then about having the lower helm and the upper helm. I'm sure you know what this is going to be. How often do you drive from the lower helm?
With the weather's cold and rainy, we're at the lower helm. But otherwise, we've found that we really like the upper helm. It's quieter. Visibility is better. And if the weather's warm at all, it's obviously cooler. We've got eyes and glass enclosure, but we can open all that up and really allows a lot of comfortable fresh air.
Yeah. So you also mentioned that the previous owner did a lot of upgrades. What were some of the things that were upgraded before you bought her?
Well, I love the galley arrangement. They put in fancy Corian countertops. They have the dual refrigerator drawers and then dual freezer drawers. I have more freezer space on this boat than I do at home.
Wow.
I love them.
That's big.
Yeah. I mean, they're amazing, which is great because for the loop, we were looping during COVID, which was great for us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we didn't have to stop and replenish. We didn't have to do grocery shopping and reprovisioning with the space we have in the freezers and the refrigerators. They upgraded the stove.
Electrical, you know, new inverter, mm-hmm. new electrical control panels, new captain's seat on the lower helm. It's just great.
Yeah.
Nice. So, yeah. It's great that somebody else worried about all of those things.
Right.
A lot of the Grand Banks have a lot of teak work, and a lot of bright work. Does your boat have that? And how hard is it to maintain that?
Well, I've gotten pretty good at it. it takes some patience, and I kind of like putzing around boats, and so it's fine, but it takes a fair amount of work. We did get canvas covers made for all the rails, so when we were in warmer climates, we would keep the rails covered, and that certainly made a difference. We found that the sun in the southern, Florida and so on, just burns through the varnish like crazy, and keeping those covers on made a big difference. But it got into the swing of it. It was just part of being on the boat and looking after stuff.
He did a really good job. I mean, he just finished redoing the upper rails, and they're perfect. They look great. They really do. We get a lot of, when we come into a marina, we get a lot of compliments. He gets a lot of compliments.
It's a little bit like driving an old woody station wagon. Everybody wants to have a conversation. I mean, it's a fiberglass boat, but everyone wants to have a conversation about the style of the boat, the wood trim, all those things.
So adds so much character and so much beauty to a boat, but certainly a labor of love to maintain all of that. So kudos to you. So let's kind of shift and talk a little bit about the Great Loop itself. You mentioned you were sailors. What made you decide to take on the Great Loop?
You want to do that one?
Well, I had read about it in a magazine and before I retired, and I just thought, God, that sounds like a great bucket list item. And a great way to see that part of the country, which I was not particularly familiar with, that, kind of the deep south and the east, southeast coast. And so it just kind of kept noodling on it and kind of kept jotting it down as an idea of something we might eventually want to do. And as I was approaching retirement, we thought, well, let's go to this trawler fest, find out more about it. So it just kind of, the more we learned, the deeper the hook was set. And just said, sounds like a great thing to do. Let's keep exploring it.
Trawler Fest was great. I learned a ton. And I think what really tipped the scales for me was the Women's Roundtable at Trawler Fest. Just hearing the stories, and I thought, oh yeah, I'm all in on this. This is really an exciting thing to do. So.
Excellent. Well, and for those of you who are inspired by Bacon Lee to look into a Trawler Fest, there is one coming up in September in Baltimore, I believe. And I will be presenting there about the Great Loop. So hopefully I'll see some of you there. So where had most of your sailing taken place?
Let's see, certainly Lake Superior. I'd sailed on a younger, had crewed on some Trans Superior sailboat races. Done some racing around the Apostle Islands, done some sailing, racing out in San Francisco Bay Area when I was working out there, and then sailing and racing around Minneapolis, St. Paul, where there's a fairly active one design fleets of J-22s and scows and things like that. So that was most of our boating experience. Although I did, when I was in college, I worked as a deckhand on a ferry boat and, did get my pilot's license. So I spent one summer operating a pretty good size, like a 90 ton ferry boat. So had some big boat, big power boat experience, although it was not quite 50 years, 50 years ago. So it was a little rusty as we started.
Yeah. And Lee, how about you?
Yeah, I had, I learned how to sail in high school in the Chesapeake Bay and also raced out there. And then Bake and I raced in the Twin Cities and up here in the Apostle Islands. So.
So obviously a lot of boating experience, which certainly helps even yeah. if you're doing the loop on a yeah. motorboat. Yes. What made you decide to go to a trawler instead of actually taking a sailboat on the loop?
You know, the reading I'd done just sounded, frankly, and I don't want to discourage anybody, just sounded like a little bit of a lot of monkey business, putting the mast up, shipping it, mast down, up, down. Also a little bit of concern about depth, water depth, mm-hmm. with a deep keel. And I know there are plenty right. of sailboats that do it, but we certainly also saw a few sailboats aground during the Great Loop. If you have a deep keel boat, you have to be very attentive, I think, to the water depths, certainly on the rivers and in the intercoastal waterway. Anyway, it just the reading I did, it sounded like there for many sailboaters, there's an awful lot of motoring anyway. Mm-hmm. And for us, the powerboat proved to be, I think, a good fit for us.
Yeah. How did that transition go? Because a lot of sailors, you know, don't really love the idea of converting to a powerboat. So a trawler, yeah. at least it's not as big of a leap. Yeah. But kind of, you know, tell us how that transition went. How did mm-hmm. you take to being, you know, the only source of power is the engine instead of using some wind? Yeah.
Well, let's see, attention point of view, learned to pay a lot more attention to the engines than we did in a sailboat. Mm-hmm. Actually it was very fortunate. We had a little bit of work done on the boat prior to us starting the loop. I mentioned rebuilding the heads, engine mounts, stuff like that. And the mechanics we had doing the work were very gracious. And I just hovered around them the whole time, asking them dumb questions, kind of crawling around the engine room, and learned a lot about I couldn't fix anything, but at least about maintenance and troubleshooting and what to watch for. And that made a big difference. It just increased my confidence level. And I did at the Trawler Fest take, I think there was a 2-day diesel repair class mm-hmm. that Nigel Calder teaches. Mm-hmm. And I took that. So I increased my confidence level a little bit. But also this boat only goes about, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 miles an hour. So it's mm-hmm. not, it's not going to go any faster than that. So it's kind of life at a slow speed. And the style of the boat I think what you were alluding to a minute ago, we talked to a lot of people in trawlers who are former sailors. Mm-hmm. There's some kind of an affinity. I don't know if it's because the way the boats look, the way they handle, I'm not sure. But anyway, it didn't feel like a big jump.
Yeah, so. No, I agree. And you probably have more insight than I do on what the reason that a lot of sailors pick trawlers as opposed to a motor yacht or something. But yeah, that does seem to be pretty common. Love that you said that you had some work done and kind of tagged along, so to speak, with the mechanics who were doing the work on the boat, because that's one of the things that I think causes some extra stress for people when they don't do something like that. If they just buy the boat and go, even if they've mm-hmm. had boating experience, it takes some time to get used to the boat and how all of the different systems operate. And it is great to have some local mechanics that you can absorb some of the knowledge from, but also that's somebody who also knows your boat. And once you leave for the loop and you're outside your home area, it's somebody that if you've built a good relationship with them, you can call on them. They know your boat now. Yeah. And can probably guide you in some of the troubleshooting. So I love that you did that. And I wish all loopers would do that, even if they have a lot of experience. Let's take a quick, go ahead.
I was just saying one other thing. The previous owner had saved all of the instruction manuals, documents, mm-hmm. and so on. And when we bought the boat, there were like three or four three-ring binders with all that information. So the winter we bought the boat, I took it home and read all that stuff through the winter. Mm-hmm. And again, I don't remember it all, but at least I knew where to find stuff. So if I was having puzzled over something with the inverter or the air conditioning, I knew exactly where to go look it up and find it and kind of troubleshoot stuff.
Yeah.
And that made a huge difference. And again, kind of increased our confidence level, I think.
Yeah. How long went by between the time that you purchased the boat and the time that you actually left for the loop?
We closed I think like January 1st, and then we brought the boat up to the western part of Lake Superior into the Apostle Islands and spent that summer just becoming familiar with the boat. And then we left Western Lake Superior on September 19th, 2019, and started from here. So we had a summer to just really get used to the boat and learn how to dock, you know, docking and anchoring and all that kind of thing. Just becoming really familiar with the maintenance and so forth.
Wonderful. Let's take a quick break and play a message from a sponsor. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about kind of your style of looping, meaning, you know, you've already mentioned that it's a slower boat, but I want to talk about, you know, how often you did marinas versus anchorages, how many miles per day you would typically travel. And we'll also talk about looping during COVID, because you mentioned that, and leaving in September of 2019 means you were probably, you know, somewhere around Florida when things started to shut down. So we'll jump into that when we come back.
Good morning, loopers. Many of you are probably already cruising in southeastern waters, and that is where the Salty Southeast Cruisers Net focuses all of its efforts to help you enjoy your time on the water. So as you prepare for the next leg of your journey, and as your resource for accurate, timely, and useful information, we want to invite you to use and add your knowledge to the wealth of information that's available through the Cruisers Net in its directories for marinas, bridges, and anchorages, as well as the latest fuel prices in your area. Our mission of Cruisers Helping Cruisers, may we invite you to help those following in your wake by sharing with us your cruising experiences. Thank you. Have a great day.
Did you know that every mile of the Great Loop is covered by both the Waterway Guide and Skipper Bob? Use them to plan your Great Loop cruise and learn about the places you can visit. In the cockpit, important navigation info is always ready at your side, plus marina listings, anchorages, services, and so much more. Each Skipper Bob and Waterway Guide is updated yearly, and waterwayguide.com and skipperbob.net keep you current with navigation alerts, cruising news, fuel prices, and special deals. With the Waterway Guide and Skipper Bob at the helm, you'll always be on course. Order yours today at the AGLCA Ship Store at greatloop.org. Waterway Guide and Skipper Bob are proud sponsors at the Admiral level with AGLCA.
We're back on Great Loop Radio. My guests today are Lee and Bake Baker, and they are sharing the story of their Great Loop. And we just kind of touched on that they are some of our COVID loopers, which, you know, for some loopers, that was a great time to be looping. It's a great way to isolate. And others found that, you know, as things closed down, it was a little bit of a different experience. So, you know, you mentioned you left Lake Superior in September of 2019. So March of 2020 or so is when things started to close down. Where were you, and what was your initial reaction to this idea that the world is suddenly changing?
I think, we have two grown sons. They were certainly affected by COVID with graduate school and college. Their lives were definitely interrupted. For us, we found it amazingly helpful because we had the museums all to ourselves. Social distancing on docks, in marinas, things like that. So we felt incredibly fortunate. We feel like we really kind of missed COVID in a way. Marinas were less crowded. I thought it was great to have that independence and be moving around the country at that time.
We were a little concerned before we started to get our shots. I don't want to get into the politics of it all, but anyway, we wanted to get COVID shots. And there was an opening in Minnesota. And so we flew crazy, but we flew home to get our first shots and then flew back and continued to travel. And, you know, we knew we were going to have to go to a grocery store someplace, whether we were living at home or on the boat. So we tried to limit it to every couple of weeks. And the scariest part, sometimes we were going to these big, chain grocery stores, in the South, where nobody was wearing a mask, and you kind of weren't sure, you know, there wasn't enough information yet about how the stuff traveled and transmission and all that kind of stuff. there are kind of moments when it's kind of like, oh boy, but anyway, it all worked out. Yeah. And we were, as Lee said, we were able to travel, and often we're some of the only people in museums. There, you know, everybody had transitioned to outdoor restaurants. We were able to sit outside and eat. It actually all worked out pretty well. We were, yeah, we were very fortunate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very fortunate. So, I'm glad I wasn't trying to, work with a bunch of, children in grade school.
At yes. home.
That would have been, we were very fortunate, you know, given our circumstances.
Right. Yeah. I'm trying to remember, I think we were, when COVID hit, we were basically from like Seneca, Illinois. And then we were in Fort Myers, Florida when we first got vaccinated. So that was mm-hmm. our stretch of being, traveling during the height of COVID.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when did you cross your wake?
August 9th. Of 2022, so just about a year ago, last summer. So
okay,
we did this very slowly and, yeah. mm-hmm. and in increments. Traveled, maybe we mentioned this earlier, but probably traveled 2 to 3 months, and then we go home for a while, a couple months, and leave the boat someplace, and then travel again. And so we spread it out over a 3-year period of time.
Right. Yeah, we mm-hmm. did a total of seven legs over 3 years. I kept very close track of everything. And I'm do a lot of writing anyway. So I kept a journal. We traveled 7,661 miles altogether over 3 years.
Wow. So what side trips did you do as part of that?
So we went up the Cumberland, up to Nashville and then back. We went up the Tennessee to all the way up to Knoxville and then back. Mm-hmm. And then when we hit, and then after we on Lake Champlain, we went up into Montreal and Ottawa and up through Canada. So those were our.
Yeah. And I guess taking the breaks to go home was also somewhat of an advantage, because by the time you were ready to head to Canada, the border was back open.
Yeah.
So, exactly.
Yep.
That also worked pretty well.
But good.
Yeah.
But lucky. Yeah. But yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Yes. So tell us a little bit about the logistics of that, because we do have a lot of people who are interested in doing the loop in kind of segments. You know, mm-hmm. how hard was it to find a place that you felt comfortable leaving the boat for an extended period of time? And did you have a set amount of time you were looking to travel at a time? Were you kind of like every 2 months, or tell us how that worked?
You know, it's interesting. I had, when we started the loop, I was still working part-time, and then when COVID hit, everybody was on Zoom. I thought mm-hmm. I was going to have to travel back and forth to home quite a bit more often than I did. And all I needed to do was put on a clean shirt and dim my back or blur my background. And no one knew where I was calling in from anyway. So mm-hmm. suddenly it gave us a lot more flexibility. But we didn't really have a set time frame. It was more just finding a place that we felt like we could leave the boat safely. And, mm-hmm. you know, some of the guidebooks had recommendations. Some of the marina operators, some of the other loopers, said, you can leave your boat X, Y, Z, not there, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so it all, but it ended up being 2 to 3 months each time when we were traveling, and usually 2 to 3 months when we left the boat someplace. Mm-hmm. And generally we had really good luck. When we left the boat someplace, it often would come back covered with spiders, but that was about
the rivers.
That was about the only issue.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. People were incredibly helpful in giving us recommendations of where to, leave the boat for 2 and 3 months at a time. So, and we didn't have any trouble ever with making those. We did call ahead, maybe a couple months ahead or a month ahead, but we just had no trouble with marina recommendations or reservations at all.
And we would often just rent a one-way car, from mm-hmm. Home or where we travel that way. So we could kind of drag some stuff with us, either home right. or back to the boat. Mm-hmm. That seemed to work pretty well, particularly again during peak of COVID when there was some hesitancy about flying. We could get a rental car, and it all seemed to work pretty darn well.
Yeah.
So when you were on the boat and cruising, did you tend to tie up at marinas mostly, or anchorages mostly, or some of both?
Some of both. I'd say maybe a third anchoring and maybe 2/3 marinas.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly the rivers, marinas. I know people anchor. We anchored a few times in some kind of interesting situations, you know, kind of tucking up under a little sandbar and stuff like that. But generally in the rivers, we were marinas. And then if there were places we really wanted to visit on land, obviously we would often stay at a marina. I'm thinking of like Demopolis. We spent a fair amount of time there. We rented a car and, you know, spent, I think, 3 or 4 or 5 days visiting civil rights sites as an example.
So looking at the time, we've almost gone through most of a half an hour already, which is kind of the benchmark we shoot for. That's great, because you've been sharing lots of great information. But I do want to hit on, what were some of the biggest highlights for you? What were some of your favorite parts of the trip, whether that's places or activities? Just what were some of the best things?
So we have collapsible bikes. And I think that was one of the reasons that we wanted to be in marinas, is so we could go and explore. When we were both history majors. Revolutionary War on the East Coast and Civil War battlefields, civil rights sites down south. One of my favorites was the Muschel Shoals studio in Florence, Alabama. That was a highlight for both of us. I think it for us, it was the experience of looping, seeing the world at 8 and 9 miles an hour, but then also just being able to take advantage of places we had never been before and getting into museums and just wandering around little towns. That was just a really an exceptional experience.
Yeah.
For me, I'll just highlight a few. We really enjoyed Apalachicola. Great little town. That was a ton of fun exploring in the panhandle. We really enjoyed the Keys, kind of funky but fun. And then coming up the East Coast, we had a great approach into New York City, seeing the tops of the towers before you could see the base of the city, on the horizon. Coming into New York City was just a hoot. I'll never forget that. I think another highlight was just traveling through Canada, the Rideau Canal, and going through Ottawa, just spectacular, beautiful, beautiful country. And then when we got up Georgian Bay and the North Channel, I think the physical beauty there was just absolutely spectacular. And I would encourage anybody to take that northern route and spend time in Canada. Folks were friendly, great facilities. It was great.
And people have asked us what the highlights are, and it's so hard because every single day was a highlight. It was amazing.
Yeah. So many gold loopers tell me that this trip is life-changing. Did it change you?
I think it did for me. So one of the things that I loved, and I think we both miss right now, is we realized that we were a team. I feel like there was marriage enrichment going on, and it was a chance to just understand more about the history of our country, the cultures that exist in our big country. And it challenged my understanding of what our history is and what our whole country is based on. What are your thoughts?
I would also say for me, selfishly, it was just a great transition into retirement, something to focus on, something to do, something to, all the intellectual stimulation just was fantastic. Very, very appreciative of it. And I think ultimately, I think both of us just came away with feeling very, very grateful to be able to do this, because, a lot of people can't. And we just felt incredibly lucky to be able to do this adventure.
Any final tips for anybody who's kind of in the planning stages and trying to come up with the best time or the best boat or all those details that you think about before you start the loop? What are your best tips for them?
We took advantage of all the AGLCA resources, the Skipper Bob books. We did a lot of research and homework, Waterway Guide, and I learned a ton, and I felt so much better prepared every day and the whole loop. So I would just say, do your homework. That'd be my recommendation.
There's going to be a lot of uncertainties. It's just kind of the deal. You know, there's a certain amount of kind of emotional, psychological agility that's required. Mm-hmm. You know, some of the stuff you can worry about and you can't do anything about it. Stuff happens. And I would just say, go for it. You can stew about all this, you know, anticipating all the challenges. And at some point you just go, you know, go with it. Your skills will develop as you go. Your confidence will develop as you go along. It'll be okay.
And you'll be glad you did it.
Great advice. I don't think I asked you, and I don't think you mentioned, what is the name of your boat?
Surprise.
Surprise.
And for those sailors who have read all of Patrick O'Brien's Jack Aubrey books, Jack Aubrey was a captain and admiral in a historical fictional series during the Napoleonic Wars in the British Navy, and his favorite ship was the Surprise.
Yeah. I love hearing about people's boat names and how they arrived at them. So that's a great one. And obviously, you know, we can tell from your background there, you are aboard. So where are your travels taking you this summer?
So after finishing the loop, we decided we really wanted to come back into Lake Superior and use this summer to explore Lake Superior. So we just recently returned from a trip up to Isle Royale. In northern Lake Superior, and then we went up into the islands in Ontario, and then came all along the North Shore to Duluth, and then back into the Apostle Islands. So, really
what
fun,
a trip.
Very fun.
We covered that a few weeks ago in the podcast, and talked about how remote, particularly that northern edge of the lake there is. So, must have been a fabulous trip.
It was, and we pulled in these anchorages, literally nobody there. I mean, there were days where we didn't see another boat. Just spectacular country, spectacular landscape, very non-Midwestern. Tall hills, mountains, big rock buttresses, just gorgeous country.
Yeah. Well, I'm hoping with the lock closures on the Illinois waterway this summer and into early fall that some people will take advantage of that extra time and actually head for Lake Superior for a bit. So it sounds like a great trip, and we wish you a lot of fun and safe cruising up there, and enjoy the rest of your summer. Thank you both so much for doing this. We really appreciate you sharing your story.
Kim, thanks.
Thanks, Kim.
Thanks for all the support you've given us and the whole organization. Thank you.
It's my pleasure. I love it. And thank you to everybody who's watched or listened today. We'll be back next week with another episode of Great Loop Radio Podcast. Until then, safe cruising.